You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. You know, guys, when you get to be our age, finding the motivation to get back in shape can be hard. It's just plain tough to find a routine and to stick with it. Good news. FitBod is a fitness app that is anything but routine. It tailors your workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule, so you can avoid burnout. And FitBod helps keep up your momentum by mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. Best yet, FitBod has over 1,000 demonstration videos, so you can learn the right way to do each exercise. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription or try the app for free at FitBod.me/Zabe. That's FitBod.me/Zabe. Today, plausibly live, it's the Zabecast.
No, we'll do it live. Fuck it. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Today's guest, sports radio lifer and DC Jewish Sports Hall of Famer, Andy Pollin.
Uh-huh. See?
And now, let's get to yakking.
Oh, here we go.
Monday, March 4, 2024, Andy is in the house, and pour one out, Andy, for Chris Mortensen. The Mort Report is no more. Passes away at 72 on Sunday. That sucks.
Oh, I did not hear that. Yeah, I'm very sorry.
Breaking news in the last, when I called you an hour ago to set this up, it was not on the radar, and then I was like, well, I guess it's timely that we delayed it. You know, he was a staple of early ESPN, as I call it, or alternate name, respected ESPN, before ESPN got stupid. Am I wrong about that?
He was part of the hires made by John Walsh, and I think Peter Gammons was the first of that type, you know, someone who had been a newspaper reporter transitioning to doing television. And Mort came along, I want to say, like 1989, 90, somewhere
right
in there.
Right.
Right. The insiders before him, it's very sad that he passed away, and I really liked him very
much. Fred Edelman.
Yeah.
Or Fred Edelstein. Freddie
who
Edelstein.
Went to jail. Yes. Yeah, who later went to jail and only got his information from Al Davis. And would spend Super Bowl week sitting by the pool. Used to see Fred Edelstein out there all the time. Let's see.
So Fred Edelstein, Mort, Edelstein, which was who did not look good on TV. Mort, who looked passable but boring on TV. And then John Clayton, who looked so bad on TV, they made fun of how bad he looks on TV.
Yeah, but he had everything. See, Mort generally worked the big stories. And Clayton was telling you all the contract extensions for the tackles and the left guards and the kickers who were moving from team to team. You know, he dealt with all the little moves, and they were a good team. And then Schefter came along probably early 2000s, something like that, right?
Does
that
believe make sense? So, yeah, because he was an early target on my radar screen because of his whole Art Monk nonsense.
Remember that? So that didn't have a signature you and I, play.
Right. Yeah. You and I started our show in 01, I guess, or 2000-ish. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, I was like, who is this guy from Denver that is on the Hall of Fame committee who says, well, I don't know if, you know, he has a signature catch or not. And I'm like, signature catch? What bullshit is that? He held the single season catch record, and he held the all-time catch record. And because the game changed soon after he retired, he got left behind like a kid at the bus stop with his mom not ready to pick him up from baseball practice. It was absurd.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally, Joe Gibbs talked to Peter King, and that changed it.
Okay. But, yeah. You know, this is our first chat since Peter King announced he was, quote, retiring. Quote, retiring, because he even alluded to, I don't know what's next. Now, he is fairly young and fairly, I would assume, in pretty good health. And I don't think he golfs or fishes. This is all Peter King does. So I think he's going to probably do something else. But give me your 2 cents on Peter King overall, both as the guy and the reporter.
Well, you and I differ a little bit on Peter King.
I've softened my stance. I said this last week. I said I was more of a dick about him than I probably should have been.
We go back to 1988. And in 1988, I was the first Giants beat reporter for WFAN. And I was sent to training camp. I didn't know anybody. And I was an out-of-towner, which is tough. I mean, I didn't really have any long history with the Giants other than watching them play the Redskins. And there were mostly newspaper guys there all day. Occasionally, TV people would show up. But I was right there with the newspaper guys. Now, you got to realize how the technology worked in those days. So I was getting stories on the air that normally would have waited until the next day for the newspaper guys. And they would call their desk and they would say, hey, I got this. And they go, well, we just heard that on WFAN. Do you have anything fresher than that? So most of the guys hated me.
I never knew this about. So it wasn't just your winning personality that pissed people off. You were beating them and causing them to do more work.
Right. The flow of information worked differently.
Right.
You know, once it was getting on the radio, basically, you know, 12 hours before it would hit the newsstand.
Give me a nugget. I'm dying to know a nugget that you would have reported that then I guess Francesa and or Mad Dog would have breathlessly reported on WFAN, which would have reverberated throughout the five boroughs, and everyone that follows sports would know about it that afternoon?
Well, I mean, it really wasn't anything, you know, big scoop or anything. It was more like
Carl Banks has a knee injury and is not likely to play tomorrow or next week.
Yeah, something like that. Or seriously, like when the quarterback would be named. Like if there was a question whether Phil Sims would start or not, because at that point it was injury, it would get on the air. Whereas, normally it would wait probably till, the TV guys would have it, but it wouldn't be till like 6 o'clock. I would have it on, you know, minutes after Bill Parcells said it.
Right.
And so they didn't like that flow. There were two guys who were nice to me. One of them was Peter King.
Can I guess the other one?
Go ahead.
Gary Myers of the Daily News.
No, Gary was Gary was not there at the time. Gary was working in Dallas.
Okay.
Gary and I, we intersected in Dallas before that, and then when I left WFAN, he came back to New York. But we never really were on the same, you know, beat together.
Okay, next guest, Vito Stellino of the Baltimore Sun.
Vito Stellino wasn't covering the Giants.
I know.
And I had a dust up years later. You know about that one.
No, I never heard that one. For those that don't know, is Vito still with us?
I think so, but I know he's retired.
Okay. Vito looked 100 years old when he was in his prime covering the NFL and covering the Baltimore Ravens, but the Colts before that, right?
The Colts, and then he went to Pittsburgh. He was in a, I think he wound up in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And it wasn't that he looked old. Nobody ever confused me with Brad Pitt, but let's just say
Vito, let me put it this way. If you would have harvested Vito's ear hair and nose hair, you could have made a sweater out of it.
Pretty much. The Glenn Brenner line was, when you went to a party, you definitely wanted to be standing next to Vito.
All right, so why did you and Vito get into it?
Oh, this was years later. So when I would go to you remember, I would always go to Super Bowl Media Day.
Yes.
And I would look for connections to the locals. So it was somebody who either played for the Redskins or somebody played for or was from the area. So the Steelers were in the Super Bowl. And then why is his name escaping me? The offensive coordinator in Tampa who worked with Brady when he was there, played in Jacksonville.
Bruce Arians.
No, the quarterback, the backup quarterback. He's from Woodson, and he went to Marshall. Come on, he broke his leg, and the players carried him up the field. You know,
Byron Marshall.
Byron.
Leftwich.
Byron, yes,
Leftwich.
So.
Leftwich.
Leftwich.
Byron Leftwich.
Byron Leftwich.
Oh boy, God.
Yeah, we're both
two,
old,
you and
boy.
I, two Alta Cockers with fading memories. Yeah.
So I was doing a one-on-one with him, and Vito walked in,
yeah.
And after about three or four questions, he starts to ask, I go, hey, hold on. And he goes, argh! And then we kind of went back and forth, like, get out of my way for another minute and a half, and then you can ask your questions, but I'm doing a one-on-one interview with him, so stop. So that didn't go well. But anyway.
Good for you for standing up. I have a couple more guesses on the other reporter that was nice to you when you were first in town in New York. Was it Dave Anderson of the New York Times?
No. Dave was a columnist. He would come out.
He
would come out to one practice a year. That wasn't his deal.
Okay. And then I guess my last guess, and this is a print guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Print guy that was nice to you. One of them was Peter King of the Bergen Record at the time.
No, he was with Newsday.
He was with Newsday. Okay. Phil Mushnick.
No, Phil, though, he lit me up a few times in print, though. He did, yeah.
Oh, shit, I got to Google search that now. Hey, Zabecast Minions, go search it out. Find the times that Mushnick eviscerated Andy Pollin for probably a question that Phil thinks was not so smart.
Well, it wasn't that. It was more of, like, see, if you want me to tell that story, too, I can.
I want all the stories.
We were in the Kaufman Astoria Studios, which is where WFAN was when it started, was a old movie studio.
Okay.
And it's where they used to film those underwater, spectaculars with Esther Williams,
Now we got to explain this one to the young kids. So once upon a time, there were TV shows, specials,
movies,
filmed for prime time.
Movies.
Yes, that movies. Were actual aquatic-based movies,
right?
Of swimmers and synchronized swimming and big like Broadway musical-style shows all set in the water to Claire de Lune and other stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And so we were underground and there were no windows. And I walk in and it's raining, and then I see people come into the station and they're wringing out their umbrellas. And so I said, well, the Yankees, I was doing updates at that point, and I said, the Yankees are due to play at 1 o'clock this afternoon, but from the looks of things, it looks like it's going to be washed out. And Mushnick writes, yes, I was driving in New Jersey, and the sun was streaming through my windshield as he spoke.
So that was a genuine fuck up by you.
Yeah, and there were others too. But
okay.
Yeah, we got off to a rough start, but I've since met him and at one point I even called him and I said, look, I'm going to try and get this right. I'm not I'm not doing this on purpose.
Was he receptive to your call?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
I mean, I still applaud Mushnick as the lone voice of sanity, standing athwart the rushing mob of greed in our business. And in sports in general, shouting, this is nuts. All of this is fucking nuts. So kudos to him. All right. Who was it that was nice to you besides Peter King?
It was Bob Glauber. And both of them.
Fuck, I should have known. Glauber's a great guy. Both,
and the point being is that those two scribes both saw the future and saw the value of getting to know people in broadcasting because they were able to parlay that into very successful secondary, you know, careers. Right. Bob was on ESPN and other places, and made quite a bit of extra money. He continued to write, and I think he retired a couple of years ago. But both of those guys were nice to me. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure, because he was not at Newsday at the time. He may have taken Peter King's place the next year when Peter King went to Sports Illustrated.
Wow. Well, Glauber was briefly on Cold Pizza, if I recall. The earliest ESPN iteration of that show.
Right. And in the early years of the pregame show for the Redskins in the 1990s, our insider the first year was Chris Mortensen, who was picking up some extra bucks doing that. And then when Mort, schedule got too busy, I had Bob Glauber do it for a few years, and he was very good at it. Yeah.
So back to the heyday of the Mort era, the Mort Report on ESPN, it was just so different back then, because I don't think Mort ever issued a hot take that was more than just slightly warmed over. He was strictly an information man. He was there to say, here's what I know, here's what's been reported, maybe here's what's rumored, but that was it. Would Mort in today's day and age be forced to dance a hot take jig, do you think?
Well, I think he was forerunner to Schefter. So would he be Schefter today? I'll tell you this. This was my experience with him when he was doing work, freelance work for me or for our station. He told me there were times that were off limits. He said, that's family time. And he has a son and maybe a daughter, but a son who played football at Arkansas briefly and then transferred to Georgia State. Was a real big high school star, but his college career didn't quite pan out. He's now, I think, an assistant at Alabama, the son. And so whereas Schefter never takes a vacation, apparently is tied to his cell phone 24 hours a day. This was, again, pre-cell phone. So this was when he first started was 1990, 91. I mean, when did cell phones become everyday common?
Well, the Motorola StarTAC was the coolest flip phone that had debuted for consumer use. We're not talking Gordon Gekko. And that was around circa 1995, I want to say, because I was living in Chicago. My friend Adam, something or another, I can't think of his name. He had one because he had a good job, and the minutes were outrageous. The battery life on it was just absurd. But that was kind of the beginning of it, because when we were at One-on-One Sports, we brought giant army-style cell phones down to Media Day, or not even Media Day, but Radio Row for the Super Bowl in Miami in 1994, and we would be able to, after the little group interview sessions around circular banquet tables with the reporters during the week of the game would break up with players on each team, one of our producers would sort of grab one guy and say, hey, and shove this giant cell phone in their hands, connected back to the studios in Chicago. And those were expensive permitted, but we were like, they're getting stuff that nobody else got. That was 95. So that's the time we're talking about, 95.
Yeah.
So
and not only that, but the sources that these guys had, not all of them had cell phones.
No.
So you're basically, a lot of the work was done with landlines. I guess, when did email become common? Late 90s?
Email, once the internet ramped up in 97, 98, 99, email shortly followed.
Yeah, so the mode of communication was a lot different then, and where Adam Schefter, somehow has a daughter and a stepson and still a wife, his life is tied to that cell phone.
Good. So wait, he claims to not take vacation, or you know this for a fact?
Oh, he says it. He says he has not taken vacation.
Claims it.
Well, he made a big simus out of stepson.
Whoa, time out. Need a 20, maybe a full. This is a first. This is a new Yiddish word for me, people. He made a what?
I called it a simus, like a big deal, about this. Simus. Okay. I just thought it was more descriptive.
Spell simus.
Well, some of these Yiddish words don't translate well, but it was S-I-M-I-S.
Okay, a big simus about.
Yeah, that he said, I am going to my son's, it's his stepson's, graduation at Michigan during the draft, and my cell phone will be turned off. And then the Eagles made some trade, and he jumped right in to give you some details about it. So,
well, either he's lying, which I don't mind, because that whole job, and he's paid insanely, paid an insane amount of money, to be honest, in my personal opinion. But that whole job is premised on the notion of I never sleep. It's Jay Glazer in that interview saying he's got two cell phones, one on each ear, even when he sleeps. So they make wake him up. The whole point of that job, if you want to get the big bucks, is to pretend like you're so wired into the league that you never miss anything. But it's all bullshit. And these guys get fed stuff, as you know, Andy, from agents that want it out there in the bloodstream. So-and-so is unhappy. This team may be interested in this coach, et cetera, et cetera.
Not only that, sometimes I see these tweets from Adrian Wojnarowski, and he's breathlessly having something out there. And I look at the name and I go, I don't know who this guy is. I mean, you know, unless you're telling me about LeBron or, you know.
Come on, Andy. You can. There you go. There's two NBA players. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, but basically that's – so I see these names and I go, okay, why should I care?
Why do I give a fuck?
And exactly. And he's paid a lot of money to do those things, you know. And he's been – there's some other guy, Sharm Sharania or something like that. And they're at war with each other as to who could get these things out first. I don't care.
Shams Charania or Charania.
Okay.
Yes, Shams is his first name. Shams is apparently a much more likable guy.
Okay.
Than Woj.
I mean, I don't know either one. Prickly.
Well, anyway, so yeah. So either Schefter's lying about never taking a vacation, or he's the shittiest dad ever. I'm sorry.
It doesn't appear that way.
Well, listen, I'm in dad mode right now with my girls on vacation and my wife out here in Phoenix. You can't be full dad if you don't take at least a little bit of time off to go on vacation with your family. You're one click shy. He might be a really good dad and also receiving votes dad, but he's not a great dad if he literally never takes a vacation. I'll die on that hill, Andy.
Okay. Well, okay. I mean, I can't.
You don't engage
know
in dad shaming. I know.
I mean, you know, because you know, Lord knows I've had my
my
failings.
Listen, I'm a middle of the road dad. You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Like to say I'm a replacement level dad. You know, I'm the guy they comp to in all the war calculations for dads, right? Scott Lynn, he's way up there. He's got like a dad war of five. Me, the replacement level guy. I'm all right.
Yeah. Okay. Scott would get the Ward Cleaver Lifetime Achievement Award, I think.
Oh, yeah. Scott makes us all look shitty by comparison, but God bless him for it. Nicest guy in the world. All right. So, as I wind this up, and I want to pivot to the combine for a second, the thing about reporters and salaries in ESPN, you mentioned to me before we came on, you go, by the way, talk about Ryan Clark getting his $2 million, and nobody gave a shit when it was all said and done.
He made a big stink, like, okay, I did everything they asked. I worked my tail off, and now it's time to get paid. And then
I've always
like,
felt I deserved more. I went out right. and I got more. I started this podcast. Hey, how about that? I did this. I did that. I'm ready yeah, for yeah. it. I'm putting in the work. And right. he got
and
just
then
about
2
million.
Went by. Yeah. And people go, well, I guess Ryan Clark left ESPN. Oh, no, he's back. And he signed for $2 million. And you go, well, based on some of the salaries I've heard, that's probably what the original offer was.
The days the days of good old, what's his name, flipping $5 million a year to Michelle Beadle for no reason whatsoever, those days are over. Like, yeah, two right. is a pretty good number. They are now finally counting pennies at the four letter red cable
well,
network in the woods.
It's not that. It's just sensible spending. Like, okay, if you don't get Ryan Clark for $2 million, you can get somebody almost as good or maybe better for that. It's yeah. you know, yeah, that's not that, I, that that's unique of
I,
a job.
That's what I said, Andy. I said they're counting yeah. pennies there, and you're like, no, it's not that. They're just sensible spending. Isn't that not the same thing?
Okay, whatever.
They're replaceable right. guys. Yeah, okay.
You're right.
All right, so that said, here we go to the combine. It's happening all over again, Andy. The same okey-doke dumb shit things that do not matter, literally do not matter, these supposedly smart football people are falling for all over again. You ready for these Caleb Williams hosannas? Laura Rutledge, who I like and does a good job. When we interviewed Caleb this week, he made a point to introduce himself to our entire production crew. May seem like a small thing, but that's a rare gesture in our business. Peter Schrager of NFL Network, last player to leave the field Saturday after the drills, Caleb Williams. Hung around and said goodbye to all the folks who ran the drills and worked the events. God, you people are so dumb. I looked up the article, SI.com, one Peter King. Manziel, the polished version. On Friday night, wrote King about Manziel, the Jaguars had a 15-minute session with Johnny Manziel. The A&M quarterback hadn't met anyone in the room, but when he walked in, all the Jaguars coaches and officials stood. Manziel went to owner Shad Khan and shook his hand. Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Khan. I'm Johnny Manziel. Then to his son, Tony Khan, senior VP. Hi, Mr. Khan. Johnny Manziel. Then to GM David Caldwell. Then to offensive coordinator Jed Fish. All the same. Handshake. Look him in the eye. Refer to them by name. He knew them all. Now, he didn't know the scouts in the room, but he knew five men by sight he'd never met. That was impressive, Caldwell said. He did a really nice job in there. He was prepared for the interview. Doesn't yep. fucking matter. And it wasn't just that he couldn't read zones and throw accurately in the pros. It was a shithead, a lazy, coke-addicted shithead, and they fell for it. And the same football people are falling for this bullshit. And I'm not saying Caleb Williams is a bad guy. I'm saying stop writing this shit, you dummies.
Right. They're looking at signs and saying, aha, that's it. No, that may not be it. And I remember when RG3 was coming out
yes.
and he did interviews with everybody and everybody loved him. And he had the Superman socks. And then amidst all this, there was a guy named Nerlens Nowacki who wrote a story and said, you know,
Nolan. I think it was Nolan Nowacki.
Nolan? Okay.
I believe he wrote the devastating scouting report on Cam, not so much
right.
RG3.
But he did also write about RG3 oh. and he said, well, my sources are telling me that he's selfish. And people like stoned him.
That's
oh,
right.
How dare you?
That's
oh
right.
my
That's
God.
That's right.
How
he
could you
did.
Say that?
But, I forgot
what is he?
That. Yeah.
He's selfish. He's the most self-centered person I have ever observed. He is all about himself more than
right.
anybody. And that's
yeah,
one of
and
the
he
reasons.
Nailed it. And yeah. I said the phenomenon is quite understandable when you consider group dynamics and the social element of group dynamics. No one wants to be the guy at the party who's like, this dude sucks. I know yeah. he was great in college, but he's not going to translate, and I've got good intel as to why, either with his physical attributes or how he plays or who he is as a person. And I'm willing to say I'm betting he won't be good. I'm not saying I'm rooting for it. I'm not saying it's a guarantee. I'm giving you my best opinion based on what I've learned. Nobody wants to be that guy because you're not part of the fun. You know, this whole process is supposed to be fun. Ooh, look at these shiny new stars. I can't wait to see them play on Sundays.
Have you heard the Merrill Hodge take on Drake May?
Not on May. I did on this podcast the Merrill Hodge quick synopsis on Williams when he said he was not special. That triggered a lot of people. He backtracked slightly, but he made some good points. Others have said, look, the tape that Caleb Williams has from SC is such a mess. By mess, I don't mean he played poorly. Just it's SC. They had dominant skill position guys. They had inconsistent, you know, production. He was like, you can't, it's hard to tell from what he did at USC because of what's on tape. And Kurt Warner talked about, they'll run the same plays in college over and over again. They'll have 5 seconds to throw instead of three, which is what they'll have in the pros. Guys will be open by 10 yards instead of 10 inches. It, so much of it doesn't translate, but I haven't heard about Drake May. I've heard some negative things. I assume that he does not like Drake May either.
He said not a first round talent, and he said he's got things that probably can't be fixed, you know. And
sounds like another ex Carolina quarterback by the name of Mitch Trubisky,
right? And there and then there are others who say, oh no, he's the best quarterback in the draft, and I take him over Caleb Williams. And so, you know, it's a big dance that goes on, and part of the reason for it is, and I blame baseball, because baseball could have this time. People could be freaking about Shohei Ohtani and right. all the other stuff.
How's he looking in spring training with the Dodgers? Blah, blah, blah.
But right now, the only thing outside the NFL that's of any interest is a woman's basketball player who's, you know, right. who's exciting, but she plays women's basketball. That's it. And so this is what we have. We have the combine dance. And just what you outlined, that's what goes on at this time every year.
But the NFL is so popular now, and they've leveraged themselves so well, integrated themselves into every part of the end of the calendar of sports. Dreaming about what Drake May or Caleb Williams might look like next September is more interesting than giving a shit about the middle relief for the Angels.
Exactly.
Nobody cares about that stuff. The shiny object, the delicious pizza, deep dish pizza with pepperoni is the NFL. Everything else is a fucking salad.
It is. And did you see the tweet that it seems like the owners are going to push the Players Association to see if they can get in 18 games? That's a slam freaking dunk. That's Wilt Chamberlain dunking on a 6'6 center right. back in 1962.
They won't have to push him, Andy. They're going to trick him like you trick your dog who's gotten one of your socks in his mouth and won't give it up and can't catch him. You go to the treat bucket like I do, and you go, Tucker, treat, and then you hold it out. He drops the sock. You pull the treat away, and you grab the sock, and you say, stop grabbing my socks. That's what the owners are going to do to the players.
I'm going back to my Sonny Corleone analogy. You take the photographer's camera, you smash it on the ground, and you throw down some 20s. That's how that's going to work.
One more on Caleb Williams. This from Mike Florio, who is maybe the dumbest smart guy in the biz. He says, quote, we met Caleb Williams, me and Chris Sims, had a chance to sit down and talk to him on camera for about 10 minutes. We both were already impressed by what he does on the field. He's very mature. He gets it. He understands what it takes to perfect his craft. He will be fully committed to the team that gets him. He'll be a natural leader, one that holds players accountable with his words and his actions. Combine that with his skills, and Caleb Williams is poised to become one of the best players in the NFL. Are you fucking kidding me? The guy that painted fuck Utah on his fingernails is very mature. The guy that was sobbing in his mommy's lap in the stands is very mature. What a take by Florio. What a fucking take. And?
I watched that 10-minute interview.
And?
Sims is embarrassing. Sims Florio actually asks some questions. Sims hops up in his lap and he can't stop licking his face. It was embarrassing. Oh, dude, you're going number one. Oh yeah, you're going number one.
You're the man.
It was like, oh my God, this is awful.
Yeah. Now look, he may end up being right. It's certainly a position. But to say that he's very mature and gets it, that flies in the face of what we've seen so far. He sounded very mature-ish, but RG3 sounded that way, and RG3 fooled the shit out of me, embarrassingly so, when he was a Redskin. So we'll see about that. Now, this was part of a larger story by Florio in which he confirmed another report from, I believe, Kalen Kaler of The Athletic, who said that, yes, that Caleb Williams' dad did inquire, not ask for, but just like say, so would it be possible for my son to get a chunk of whatever team he's going to play for, some ownership stake? First of all, it's not permitted by league bylaws, so that's a dumbass to begin with, and also they're not going to give it to him. But that's been confirmed. So basically Florio, who was a labor lawyer prior to this, which makes him smart, then goes on the dumbest rant about, yeah, he should get some ownership stake. All these players should get some ownership stake, you know, whether it's Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. And people savaged that on Twitter, because he's turned off the comments, by the way, at profootballtalk.com, which is too bad. But you go to Twitter, you read the comments, people are like, so if a quarterback doesn't make it with a team that drafted him, but he's got a piece of the team like the Bears, and he gets traded, how does that work exactly?
Yeah, that makes no sense. Yeah, do what Brady did. Win 7 Super Bowls, make a boatload of money, and go to the Raiders and say, hey, can I buy a piece of the team?
Right, that's what you do.
Or Magic Johnson, you know, win a piece of
the Commanders. Right,
yeah, exactly. And then buy your way in. But no, you're not giving out pieces of the team. It doesn't work that way.
Why would Florio write that? Like, either he's just engagement farming to get people like me to talk about it, or there's something he doesn't get. For as much law as he knows, and I'm sure he knows labor law backwards and forwards, this was just fucking dumb.
He also articulates these things well. He speaks well, like a lawyer. So that helps him. But yes, some of these things are ridiculous.
All right, let me end on this. I doubt you watched any of it, because it was on at 3 a.m. and you had to have the CW app. Anthony Kim made his comeback to professional golf.
Oh, I heard
golf.
That. Yeah,
76, 76, 74, dead fucking last, or DFL, in the short field 54-man live boombox and shorts event over in Jeddah. This comeback caps a 12-year mystery of, whatever happened to that guy? Because he didn't just retire from golf with an injury at age 26. He literally was never seen again. And he had rose to number 4 in the world, had a smashing Ryder Cup appearance at Valhalla in 08, and then disappeared. Became like the mysterious case of Sid Finch, which we all know is a fake story. Great fake story by George Plimpton. So he made his comeback because Greg Norman thinks this is what's going to get Liv some traction and eyeballs. And he finishes dead last. He completely sucked. So the question is, whose comeback in sports is at all comparable to it? Kevin Van Valkenburg wrote the following. You tell me if you agree. He says it's like Bjorn Borg. Borg was burned out, quit tennis at 25 after losing in the 81 U.S. Open final to John McEnroe, and then was out of tennis for such a long time that he came back with nothing but an outstanding resume and a wooden racket, and it did not go well. By then, the equipment and rackets had, like, really advanced, and he showed up with his old wooden lollipop and was getting smoked.
Yeah, that's what happened. What happened with him, yes, the burnout happened, but also he had lost twice to John McEnroe. He had beaten him in an epic final at the Wimbledon the year before, and then lost to him, I think it was 81, and then followed that up with the loss at the U.S. Open. And for a guy who had won, I think, 5 straight Wimbledons and I don't know how many U.S. Opens, it was too much to take, so he left. He also thought that he was going to be financially secure for the rest of his life, That changed somewhat when he got divorced and made some really bad investments. So as I remember, when he came back, yes, I do remember the wooden racket, and he needed money. That's why he came back.
Yeah, divorce, a clothing line that was a huge money sink, and probably cocaine as well. You know, I can't convince that, but, you know, just saying, it was popular back in the day, Andy. Andy, listen, this is not a Cortal. I'm just kidding. I don't know if he did coke or not.
I have no
idea.
You get
so fucking skittish over any cocaine references. Jesus Christ.
I know, but if you're saying cocaine and you don't have any idea, I don't think that's fair. The other things were fair. He got divorced and he made a bad investment in the clothing line. That's true. I have not heard anything about cocaine.
You act like cocaine is the worst thing in the world. It's just a drug. It's a recreational drug.
Well,
like a lot of recreational drugs.
Don't have any plans to.
Well, that's fine. Neither do I. I'm exactly in the same boat. I've been offered it 3 times. I said no all 3 times. Thank God. You know why I said no 3 times to cocaine? Not because of Nancy fucking Reagan. I'd guarantee you that. Mm. But my little pea brain that doesn't understand mathematics does understand some things about life. I said, first of all, it could kill me, like, you know, Len Bias. So don't want that. You never know, right? Secondly, I'm either gonna love it and then become addicted, or it's gonna be really bad and something bad's gonna happen. So, like, there's no upside. Right. The upside would be, holy shit, this drug is amazing. I want to do it some more. That's also not good. So there was no upside. I said thank you, but no thanks.
I turned it down when Len Bias was in junior high school. And it was thought of at the time as it was thought of as being better than heroin because it wasn't addictive, believe it or not. And something told me, and I was offered it many times, believe me, because when I was in those circles in the early 80s, wow. I was around some NBA players because
like
we were covering the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, you were around them. Okay. I thought you were going to high school. Okay.
No, this was in Dallas in the early 80s.
And so,
cocaine was quite available then. And fortunately, I turned it down.
All right. Well, anyway, last ad on Anthony Kim. So he shanked a shot in his comeback, mm-hmm. which is embarrassing. And Greg Norman on TV, you know, the face of the Live Tour, said, "Yeah, you know what? I think he was distracted by the drone we use on the Live Tour that was hovering overhead. He'll get used to that. There's a bit more out here he's going to have to adjust to." And I just laughed going, well, there's an excuse. Drone overhead for a shitty shot. I guess pants too tight and or music too loud still available as excuses.
Too bad there wasn't drones available when he screwed up the Masters 25 years ago.
Right. You know, there's a Carl's Golfland ad in which they run through all these excuses that guys have. I wrote a few of them down for you. The geese were staring at me. I never play well in these socks. My Band-Aid came loose right in my downswing. My shirt isn't wicking enough. And was that tree always there?
See, I don't have any excuses because I'm not playing.
And he tried it. He didn't care for it. And it's in the rear view, and you don't miss it. And that, my friend, I respect. All right, very good. Andy, thank you for your time and your patience with me technologically. Good run today, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you.
Very good, Dave. Take care.
There you go. And that's a wrap for today, Sting. Thank you for being a subscriber as well. Have a great Monday, and we will see you next time. Why in the world would anybody put chains on? I paid my dues to make it. Everybody wants me to be what they want me to be. I'm not happy when I try to fake it.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.